Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back, episode 3, season 6. Now, what are we going to be talking about? Contemporary dance, that did feature last week. Where drivers are going to end up in the WRC in 2017. There's a fair chance that's going to happen. Are we going to do it with passion? Undoubtedly we'll do it with passion. Will we do it with any kind of unique knowledge? That's questionable, as some people have already pointed out. But anyway, before we go any further, there's no show without punch, there's no punch without Judy, so I'll come first. Jack Bennion, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How was contemporary dance last week?
It was fantastic, actually. I really surprisingly really enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. Lots of people feeling the music and everything else. Did you get involved? Did you take your shoes and socks off like I suggested?
I didn't know. I'll be honest, I had no idea what was going on, but I found it all very entertaining, so that's good.
Yeah, entertaining is a very interesting way. You had no idea what was going on. I think that's quite important. I think that's quite important because that's very fitting for this particular podcast, if you believe certain quarters. But anyway, there you go. Now you're in the opening sequence of the bill because we're going to hear sirens throughout this podcast. I have no shadow of a doubt. I'm sat in my little studio, which we fire up around this time every week, and we start talking to our guests and we do our pit at the top and everything else. And then you get Ryan Champion. Now Ryan Champion could be anywhere. He could be on his manor somewhere, you know, possibly scolding a butler or something like that, or he could be at a secret test for a supercar manufacturer that will remain nameless. He could be anywhere. He could be doing anything. And that is the beauty of our own James Bond, Ryan Champion. But no. This week, no. He's not at home. He's not in his country manor. Ryan Champion, where are you this week?
I'm in Barbados this week.
Of course you are. Of course you are. I feel a nana for even asking.
And hopefully it'll be a little bit quieter corner of Barbados than the one I found a few months back when I was here, where we had all the buses passing that caused quite a bit of interest. But I think I found a quiet corner.
I forgot about that. That was interesting from an engineering point of view, retrospectively. But there you go. Now Jack wasn't with us last week. We talked about the possibilities with unfounded knowledge and confidence. Zero in the things we were suggesting. We just debated it and we talked about it. I'm pretty much following on from what we did and what everybody in the world who has got a love for rally and is done for certainly for the last 7 days. And in fairness, I think Jack, it's fair to say, even the headline this week, front page, again for rally and on MN. What next for Ogier?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, I listened to the podcast and heard you three talking with surprising amounts of knowledge actually about what was going on and what the situation was.
You're one of the few that thought that, Jack.
We didn't really have any objectives, it has to be said, but you know, we had a bit.
That can always produce the best debate though, when you've got no objectives. That can always be the best thing.
I think so as well, Jack. Now, you weren't with us for this, and obviously, just following on from that front page, David Evans, as ever, wrote an excellent and in-depth piece with regards to the whys and wherefores and where things could be. For putting aside the MN point of view, what's Jack Bennion's point of view?
Jack Bennion's point of view is the same as pretty much everybody else. He's interested in rallying and he's trying to work out what's going on. He doesn't know what's going on, but he has many thoughts about what might be happening. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Unless you're Ogier's closest confidant, then we really don't know what's going on. For the sake of playing the game, I still personally think that Citroen's got to be the favourite option. That's my sort of my feeling as to where he might go. But it'd be nice to see him at M Sport, and I think the thing which could make the M Sport deal even more likely is the fact that we know that the drivers are getting their salaries guaranteed for next year. So maybe the fact that Ogier's still receiving his Red Bull money will make it possible for him to go to M Sport.
Well, that goes into the story here as well, and I'll bring Ryan at this point, and I'll come back to you on that, Jack, is that they're still getting salaried, Rye, from the manufacturer, which is great, obviously, for them. But also they are still receiving their Red Bull money, which is, from my understanding, is a separate pot almost of being a Red Bull athlete.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. We've seen quite a lot of that in the WRC over recent years. I mean, we saw Chris Meek and we've seen Elfyn Evans benefit from this as well. So you're right that they're under contract to Volkswagen, so they are getting their salary. I mean, I think Ogier's under contract for next year as well, isn't he, from Volkswagen? So I assume there's probably 2 years' salary in that. But he is getting his salary. There is some Red Bull personal sponsorship, so it would give him maybe a little bit more freedom in where he wants to go. We've seen Malcolm Wilson obviously come out, I think we knew that, and say that I really want to go for Ogier. He's offered a test as soon as Ogier is contractually free to drive the car. And I think that could be key as well. You know, if Ogier gets to drive these cars, which one strikes him? You know, which one is strikes him as the best potential for next year? Another interesting little stir of the mix is that I see Mats Osberg is now testing the 2017 Fiesta as well. So we certainly can't rule him out now from the M Sport camp, be it an M Sport car, be it a third party funded car. You know, if he's testing the car at the minute, we'd have to say he looks like he's going to be there somewhere.
Now, Jack, I'll come to you because you've got sirens. With regards to its queue, that's when we know we've got to come to you when you get sirens. With regards to, as I say, what you were mentioning there, with regards to obviously salary still being in place, and that's the case for all the drivers, of course. So, you know, their personal lives, if you like, which is obviously very important, it is a job and everything else, their personal lives and everything else, and their families are secure. So does it leave all of our drivers, obviously we're talking about Ogier, we've got Mikkelsen and we've got Jari Matti, does it leave them to perhaps make a decision with the heart as opposed to the head?
Possibly, yeah. I think there is one important caveat on that though, and that's the fact that Red Bull have got to approve where the drivers go. So, you know, there is talk that maybe if Ogier goes to Citroën, then Red Bull aren't offering the money. I don't know how true that is, but I know that it is a caveat in the Red Bull deal that if they're to get paid next year, then it's got to be a team that Red Bull approves. So that might be something that sort of makes it difficult for the drivers to decide where they're going to go. I think maybe a little bit difficult, but yeah, you could be right. Maybe they'll choose a little bit differently with that in mind, knowing that they've got some money coming in next year. But I still think it's very likely we'll see all three of those drivers out next year, and I'd be very surprised if we didn't.
Are you surprised Rice just brought it up there? And we know Elfyn Evans, of course, was testing the 2017 car only a couple of days ago. I assume it's the same test. Are you surprised to see Mads out in that test car?
No, not at all. I think, given the way the drive market's played out, I think it's fairly obvious that Mads is going to end up in a Fiesta next year. You know, that, you know, I might be wrong on that, but the way I look at the driver market, it seems like Osberg's sort of only option really is to stay with Ford next year and maybe run the car and do the adapter racing squad maybe or something like that. But I think we'll definitely see Mads in a Fiesta next year, and given the fact that he's out testing the car. It's interesting, isn't it, at this point, just as Ogier becomes available, we're seeing so many drivers testing the new Ford, because, you know, it's kind of alluded to by many people, actually, that people wouldn't be driving that Ford until they had a contract next year, and maybe that's the reason why Elfyn hasn't tested the car so much. So, you know, it's interesting we've got two drivers coming in 2 weeks, just as Ogier comes on the market. It's making things quite interesting.
Cynical, I know, but are they trying to effectively shake that car down right to get it ready for Ogier, almost? You know, let's get the bugs out of it now before Ogier gets anywhere near it.
I think at this point they're just getting all the mileage they can. We've seen M Sport are already testing in the Alps, they're already testing on snow ready for Monte. Time's running out, isn't it? And I think any mileage they can put on these new cars is vital at this stage. We've seen Citroën are in Wales this week. Is that test number 9, I think, for them? And you know, everybody's getting every last bit of mileage they can to develop these cars in preparation for next year. And it's it's, as we talked about last week, it's an exciting time in WRC because we've got brand new cars coming, and what was the dominant team is now no longer. So we have no idea who's going to win in Monte Carlo, and I think all the teams will see it as an opportunity they can all win next year's WRC.
Jack, that's the, you know, we got to this point, I suppose, towards the end of our podcast last week, Ryan and myself, is that we kind of put Ogier to one side, and then we kind of sat down and I suppose reverse engineered the Jari Matti, the Andreas Mikkelsen situation. I think we kind of ended up with Jari Matti at Toyota. I don't think anybody has said anything different. Although I've seen a couple of people maybe on social media now saying that it could possibly be a Ford. You know, we really don't know, do we? But Funny enough, we've done a piece with Jamie Edwards about the Rally for Wales campaign and everything else. Now, Jamie, funnily enough, he's quite a low key guy. He doesn't bang on too much about what he's done, but he's been around Finnish Rally and he was involved with a couple of drivers over in Finland. He was also involved with Andreas in his very, very early days when he was run by Ramsport. So he's not daft, Jay. And after recording the piece we did about Rally for Wales, we got talking to where the drivers could go. And I think he echoed probably what Ryan and I spoke about last week was, you know, that there's a Finnish loving going on, obviously, at Toyota with Tommy Mäkinen, and it all makes sense. Do we see Jari Matti anywhere other than Toyota?
That's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, you know, we had VW come out and, Toyota come out and sort of declare interest in Yari, didn't we, earlier this year? Was it maybe the end of last year? But they definitely came out and declared interest in Yari, sort of had to say, well, I'm on the contract and I can't see me driving anything else other than a VW. But Toyota seemed to be the ones who suited Yari the most out of the teams. So, yeah, I think that's probably the favourite option. Could he go back to M Sport? You know, he had many successful years there, really, when you look at it, really. He won quite a few rallies and no championships, obviously, but still a relatively successful period, I think. And I don't think he'd hesitate to go back there if necessary. But yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to not knowing about the cars at the minute, isn't it? And I'd be very interested to see if we see Andreas, Yari and Sebastian testing all the cars to see which one's the best and then making their decision, because, you know, at the minute we're talking very hypothetically about where the drivers are going to end up, and it's all on hearsay, isn't it, really? But, you know, are we going to see them all testing the cars? That's the next step for me that makes it even more interesting.
But then that's an interesting one, isn't it, there? Because would you want somebody testing a rival's car or testing your car and then the following week going to one of your major rivals? Let me tell you what I found. Yeah,
go on.
It gives the drivers more sort of it gives them a stronger position, doesn't it?
To plan things,
they've tested one car and not the other. You know, it's like you say, it'll be very interesting to see if that happens or not.
Right, I'll come to you, and again, slightly left field this one, but do you see all the Volkswagen drivers leaving and becoming a number one driver at another team?
Number one, I don't know, because ultimately all the teams had a plan in place for next year, didn't they, before this happened? So, I think even if Ogier went to Citroën, for argument's sake, Chris Meek's status in the team, it will still be as a number one driver. I mean, yes, if he has Ogier alongside, he's going to have a French multiple world champion, but we know Chris is well thought of within the team. He's done all the testing for the car. He has the knowledge. He'll still be a number one driver there, but obviously I think it would be equal number one. If Yari goes to Toyota, then likelihood is, yes, he'll end up as a number one. And we talked, and then we came to this last week, where does Andreas go? If he ended up at Toyota, for argument's sake, with Yari Matti, then that would be, I don't know, they'd probably be equal. If Andreas goes to M Sport, it all depends on who's alongside, doesn't it? But I don't think they'll all necessarily be ultimate number ones, but they're strong drivers with a proven record, and they will expect an equal number one status, I'm sure.
I'll come back to Jack on this one. Jack, it's kind of what where Rai went to at the beginning of his point there with regards to Chris Meek, of course. And there's a section here, but again by David Evans. I would love to partner Ogier at Citroën in 2017.
Yeah, we've got Chris on the record saying that, and that may surprise a few people. It may not, but is Sebastian Ogier being in the same car as Chris Meek a good thing for Chris Meek? I'm not sure. That depends where you sort of rank Chris against Sebastian, and for the neutrals involved, that's a tantalising prospect, isn't it? OJ versus Meek in the same car. That sounds very exciting to me, and I'd definitely love to see that as a fan.
You know what? I go the other way completely. Where do you go on that, Ry? Would you like to see them in the same team?
I'm quite impressed with, well, I guess Chris has to say that, really. He has to say that he'd relish it, because he has to be confident in his own abilities, and I think that tells us that Chris is incredibly strong in his own mind now as to where he's at, and I think if Chris Meek is willing to take Ogier on in the same car, then I'd have to say, yeah, let's bring it on and let's see it. I think Chris Meek's best chance for the World Championship is if Sebastian Ogier isn't in the same team, quite honestly. Because ultimately Ogier is just so consistent, we know that. But it'd be interesting, like we said, it'd be a fantastic battle to see them in the same team.
You see, I agree with all your points across the board, is my issue with it. Would it get to the point where they'd be allowed to battle like that? And that's what we all want to see. We all need to see Chris and Ogier go toe-to-toe.
You're right. And would we see it for the year? Probably not, because one of them will inherently get an advantage. And that's exactly what we were just saying. Ogier is incredibly consistent. And if Ogier ended up, 20, 30 points ahead, then you'd have to say the team are then going to support his bid, aren't they? So, yeah, it's a true point.
Go on, Jack, sorry.
If you're going to look at that historically, then you've made a good point there, because one of the key reasons why OJ left Citroën in the first place was because that Citroën was supposedly favoured Sebastian Loeb. And we knew the Volkswagen programme was coming along and that it was going to be a lot of investment. But one of the key reasons was that OJ didn't feel like he was getting the same treatment that Sebastian Loeb was. So if you look at it in historical context, then your point's a very good one.
Yeah. Wow. We'll just end the podcast there. I think that's it. Good night. Now, again, I just think we're in a unique position again, where we could have the fastest drivers in separate teams all ready to go for it. In my head, this is, I'm playing fantasy kind of, fantasy WRC manager, as we joked about last week, but to see Seb at M Sport, to see Yari Matu at Toyota, to see Chris at Citroën, to see Thierry at Hyundai, and obviously what Danny's done, and also with Hayden kind of snapping away at the heels there, I think we've got a perfect scenario for an amazing WRC season, and that's without even mentioning the new cars, boys, to be honest with you.
Can't disagree with that.
It looks incredibly exciting. It really does. We have got a wide open battle. And one thing I was just going to chip in there with: are we surprised? Now, I know they have plenty of contracted drivers, plenty. Are we surprised that Hyundai have ruled themselves out of the race for Ogier?
Jack, you can go first on that one.
Absolutely, 100% shocked that any team would turn down the opportunity to go for Ogier, especially a team that supposedly, if you look at the resources in the service park, I think looking at Hyundai's setup, you'd have to say that they put the most money into their setup. So
yep,
if they've
yep.
got expendable income, I've not seen Hyundai's budget, I don't know what it is, but I imagine they've got money to go for Ogier, and the fact that they're not is, quite worrying for me. If I was a Hyundai fan, the fact that you're not going after the best driver in the world when he's available, to me, it's a no-brainer. And we know Malcolm hasn't got Ford backing anymore and doesn't have a budget as big, but he's still come out and said, I'm going to do absolutely everything in my power to persuade Ogier to come here, and that's the kind of intent you want from a team principal, if that's the team that you're backing, because Ogier is just he's someone you've got to have in your car, isn't he? If you're going to pick drivers, he has to be number one for me if you're picking a driver from scratch.
Absolutely, that my thoughts exactly. If you're a determined team who want to win the World Rally Championship and the undisputed number one driver in the world comes up, why would you rule yourself out from chasing after him? Contracted drivers or not, surely if you want to win the championship, you go for the best driver, don't you?
I've got my hand up here, boys.
Go on.
I've got my hand
go
up. I'm going to see it from a different perspective, and the pair of you will shoot me down. I have no shadow of doubt about it. But Thierry Neuville, Danny Sordo, Hayden Padden, what a shot in the arm for them from their team manager to say, do you know what, boys? No, we could go and get him, but I've got faith in you.
I agree to a point, but firstly, how many of those three can win the World Championship next year? How many of those three? In numbers, Tony, how many of those three?
I would say one of them.
One, and I would say one. Jack, how many would you say?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
One. So there's only one of the three drivers can win the World Championship next year. So does that not say something?
Are they not playing the team game as well, though?
Yeah, maybe. And maybe the Manufacturers' Championship is more important to them at this stage. Maybe that's the case.
Yep.
We don't know that. You know, it could be that that's Hyundai's ultimate goal at the minute, win the manufacturer's championship. I guess ultimately that's why a manufacturer comes into it. But I'm still a little bit surprised, I have to say.
Do we look at it as well, though, that, you know, if you look at Hyundai and the makeup of Hyundai, and obviously, you know, we've had Hayden on numerous times, a friend of the show, and we spoke to him about this way back when, you know, obviously his deal is supported by obviously the importer, you know, Hyundai, New Zealand, obviously heavily involved, and also he's involved with what they're doing nationally and things like that. I'm not too sure what the situation is with Danny. I think obviously he has his own personal sponsor, but he is a contracted driver and stuff like that. You know, if not maybe as clean cut as, you know, contracted drivers.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, we obviously don't know what's happening behind the scenes, and, you know, and let's not forget they've got Kevin Abring on board as well, so they do have four very capable drivers.
There's incredible depth, and, you know, okay, Danny's had a fair crack of the whip over the years with different manufacturers, and, you know, if anything, he's probably been one of his better seasons since the days of being, you know, a very clear number two to Sebastian Loeb this year, you know, regards to results and things and kind of mixing it up and everything else. So, you know, I just think that, you know, Hayden's building his experience as well, you know, Thierry's building his experience, you know, perhaps they're looking towards a little bit more towards the future as opposed to the here and now. Just saying.
Could well be the case.
Jack, now go on, yeah. You can shoot me down. Go on, no, you shoot me down by all means.
Absolutely no reason. What part am I shooting you down on? On the part with it, that they're still not going for OJ or a different part?
Yes, yeah, pretty much. It was an open goal.
I agree. There was there is elements of sort of a motivational technique that you picked up on there. I think maybe that's fair, but is Nandan sort of risking the chance to win a world championship by motivating three drivers who probably aren't going to win the championship? That would be my suggestion for that. I mean, you know, obviously you want to get your best out of Jerry Nervo because he's clearly the best driver in that trio, I think. And I think Hayden's coming on very well, and, you know, we saw last year how quick he can be. But the consistency isn't quite there for Hayden yet, and I don't think anyone doubts that it'll come eventually, but, you know, he does need that bit more time. So I think, you know, one thing that maybe is a little bit sad is that this sort of Volkswagen deal has narrowed down the seats, hasn't it? You know, we were talking so much about likes of Ezra Pekalati and Timo Sunen and people like that who are coming through and have earned their stripes coming through the WRC Support Championships, and you know, it's looking more like they're not going to get a seat next year or are going to have reduced running compared to what they might have had. So, you know, I think that is a bit of a sad thing to think about when we're looking at this. You know, as much as it is exciting that we've got so many, you know, good drivers looking for good seats, I think there does need to be an eye kept on the future as well, because, you know, some of these drivers aren't getting any younger, and we do need to replace them at some point, and I think they need the opportunity to be able to compete at that level.
I just wonder whether, you know, the likes of and you know, obviously it's not a full time, obviously it's not a competitive seat time, right, but, you know, there's still strong talk, and I'm going to come to you as well in a second on this, Jack. There's still strong talk, obviously, at the Polo R5, which Marcus Grönholm has been involved with, and you know, it looks like he's still going to continue to be involved with, and, you know, they're looking to roll that car out in 2018. Could one of these younger drivers perhaps find a home there, you know, and you know, almost take a year out, but be the development driver for Volkswagen, and you know, at least keep themselves sharp?
It's a possibility, but I guess it will ultimately, reading between the lines, be a customer program, and whether there'll actually be you know, a works run Polo R5, I think that's probably unlikely after what we've seen over the last week with the factory team pulling out. We've seen Skoda, for example, run a works R5 program. We've seen M Sport effectively run a works R5 program, but you know, Hyundai, for example, other than obviously putting Kevin in it to develop the car and then to get the car seen out there, we haven't seen a continuous program. Whether we will next year, we might do, But at this stage, it'd be difficult to see much of a long-term works programme, I would say, for an R5 Polo.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Jack, as I've just mentioned, obviously there's a little sidebar on the page this week with regards to the Polo R5. Obviously, you guys have been talking to Marcus Grunholm. Is Marcus still expected to still be involved, or what's the situation there?
I don't know that for sure, but you know, I think there's still a lot of work to do with this car. I don't think it's ready to go yet, so I think it's very likely that he'll be involved further. But yeah, I can't tell you any more about that than what's on the page now, unfortunately.
I think the other issue I wanted to come to before we move away, if we can move away from the biggest story, I think that's happened in the last 12 months in WRC. Volkswagen, you know, various things. I seen something about, well, Red Bull could buy the equipment and run their own team and things like that. And there's a piece here, Jack, with regards to, and I think Ryan and I spoke about this a little bit last week, Volkswagen will not release any of the 2017 cars for private teams to run. Throughout its four-year World Championship effort, there's never been a private car. And it was the same when VW signed off the Dakar program, despite best efforts of Nasser Al-Attiyah. So I guess it's one of those bizarre moments that technically there's going to be a WRC car, 2017 WRC car, one which we thought was going to be probably the best 2017 WRC car, bearing in mind it's been in development for 2 years. That's going to be hidden away somewhere, perhaps in a museum, and never actually be driven in anger against another manufacturer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not particularly a strange thing in Berlin, is it? You know, so after Group B, the category after that, the some of the cars that were built there, Audi had a car that ran recently, didn't it, with Walter Waldorf. It's happened before, where rules have changed halfway through the development cycle of a car. But you know, it's really sad to see that the VW is not gonna run next year, and I think people are saying it's gonna be the fastest car. You know, that's the really sad thing is we'll never know, will we? We'll never ever know whether that was the fastest 2017 Valley car, and it's just gonna be, I think I saw the quote, it was gonna be mothballed, which is just really sad, to be honest. I was really looking forward to seeing that car, and you know, I think there's a few Brits who are really looking to see that car tested for GB, because you know, it did go through the Welsh Forest very briefly, and I think people will be looking at for 20 years to come, and I think there'll be thousands of people claiming they were at that test watching that car.
Yeah, it's again, you know, while it's created some excitement, there's still an element of, I think, a disappointment, I think, across the board, that we're not going to have, you know, four manufacturers and M Sport, you know, fighting in 2017. But it does give us a whole heap of debate of where everybody's going to end up. We will move away just very, very briefly from the Volkswagen story. We're just going to crack on with a couple of other just sidebar stories. Jack, I just wanted to come to a quick BRC story. It seems like it's going to be a lifetime away now, but just looking now, we've never had him on the show. I knew Desi a little bit back in the day, but Desi Henry now is going to focus, ironically, if we've just been talking about R5 cars, he's going to be taking his Skoda R5 into the British Rally Championship next year, and that's where his focus is going to come from.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of debate going on. You know, we're not going too much into it about Irish Tarmac Championship and where they are and what formula they use, and they switched to R5 cars last year from WRC cars. You know, we've got one story in the paper this week saying Donna Kelly is going to switch to a potentially going to switch to an R5 anyway. He's got an outing coming up. So there's debate of people going both ways, but it looks like Desi is just going to commit to the British Championship and not the Irish Tarmac Championship next year. So that's maybe a little bit disappointing for them, but he was definitely one of the most impressive drivers towards the end of the year last year. He was really struggling with setup on his Skoda, and once he got that sorted around mid-season, he had two consecutive podiums and was very quick in the Isle of Man as well. So I think he'll definitely be one to watch for the Championship next year, and I'm certain he'll be sort of top five, if not further up.
I don't know whether you attended the test, Jack. You know, you are a man that gets everywhere, but there was also a customer test, an M Sport R5 customer test. I think it was last Friday, and it seems to great and a good from all over with the various people testing this R5 car. Any whispers from there that perhaps we're going to see some shocks, people driving Fiesta R5s next year?
I can't really share them here, can I? They've got to be in the paper first.
Okay, all right, fine. See what I tried to... I tried to catch him out.
Yeah, you tried your best. There's a couple of interesting people here. I think, obviously, Chris Ingram was there, European front-wheel drive champion. Matthias Edilson was there, who finished third in the BRC Juniors this year. And then there was John O'Sullivan, who won the 2015 Irish Tarmac Junior Championship. And there was Kevin Horgan, who won this year's Irish Tarmac Junior Championship. So, yeah, just a bit of a question of the day, fan sports, demonstrate the cars. And I don't think any of those... drivers there. I don't think that signals any intent or says they've definitely got a car for next year. I think there's plenty more to come, and I've spoken to all of those drivers, and none of them sort of bought an R5 on the spot or anything like that. So definitely more work to be done in terms of sponsorship and stuff like that for next year for those drivers.
Right, wouldn't it be nice to just turn up and do a test and just buy one on the spot?
yes, it would, yeah.
Just imagine writing that check. Yeah, I'll have one. No problem. There you go. Happy days. Boys, we've got to that point in the programme where we're going to go to any other business. I know Ryan's got his already, Jack. He's had this lined up for close on 7 days. Have you got your any other business for this week?
Yeah. I'm slightly worried now that you referred to me when Brian was talking about any other business. So is this to do with me?
No, nothing to do with you. It's Jack. Right? It's called the podcast is called Absolute Rally, not Absolute Jack Bengen. It's not all about
that
you, mate.
Sounds like a podcast that I'd like to listen to.
Absolute Bengen sounds like it sounds almost like an insult. Let's be honest.
You're an absolute Benyon, you are.
You're an absolute Benyon.
I like it. Right, you do.
I don't know what, you know what, that's it. Now, if we refer to anybody as an absolute Benyon, we know what's happened. To be fair, we've had a few absolute Benyons in contact of late. But anyway, moving on. Are any other business for this week? Are you happy to go with yours now, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. I can go with mine, if you want.
Oh, yeah, you're very confident in this. Okay, Jack. Jack's any other business? Fire away, mate.
I won't say I'm confident, but you won't be surprised to know that my any other business is about me this week.
Of course. Oh, I would feel a nonner if it wasn't.
Oh, that's all right then. So, I did a small single venue right the weekend on Saturday, I did a single venue. I didn't really, because I co-drove for touring car driver Paul O'Neill at Alton Park, and our gearbox broke on the first stage, and we didn't quite even get the full loop of the stage, and I think the time was about 4 minutes 31 something, so it was a very short second co-driver event for me, but it was really nice to get out with Paul. I know Ryan knows Paul very well, and it was lovely to see Paul introduced to the sport in a friendly environment, a place he knows very well in Old Park. Like I said, really, it was really enjoyable to introduce someone to rallying, and I think we'll definitely see Paul out again soon. So I'm looking forward to that. But we'll have to get Paul on the show sometime to chat through the shortest rally debut in history.
No, we'll definitely get him on. Although I'll be honest with you, Jack, out of all the any of the businesses you've ever done, right, I reckon that's the laziest one. Just thought I'd mention it.
Harsh.
I don't think. No, I think that's fact. You know, the reason why I'm saying this, right, is because yours, and I'm not just saying this to kind of backside kiss you, but yours has got a slightly more depth to it.
I'm going to say that as a compliment. I've set the any other business
value that hard. You are, to be fair, mate. You're really any other businesses. You know what it was like? It's when you first started the job, right, and you made sure you probably got into work, maybe 20 to 9, something like that. Even though it was a 9 o'clock start, you made the first round of brews and everything else. 3 months in, you were getting in at 1 minute to nine, and you'd always go missing when it was your turn to make a brew. You possibly take a little bit too long in the toilet, just killing that extra 5 minutes where you could, and then you come back to your desk and just make a brew for yourself. That kind of felt like what went on there with that any other business. And that's no disrespect to Paul, massive respect for Paul. I think you've just let him down with how you've sold that any other business. That's my opinion. And listen, I'm entitled to my opinion, because if anything, I'm passionate, but lack knowledge. Always remember that, Jack.
It's wrong, but you're entitled to your opinion. Always remember that, Jack.
Anyway, we've just been building it up. You better be doing the any other business you told me you were going to do, right? Otherwise, this is going to fall flat in its face. Ryan Champion, your any other business for this week's
podcast? All right, my any other business this week is, so if you're a fan of the show, you're a rally fan. And if you're a rally fan, you've spent a lot of time watching WRC, of reading motorsport news and eating and drinking the sport. What is your iconic WRC image? So what is the photograph that pops into your head that sums up WRC to you? And this really was brought about to me by, I saw this week that we had Colin McMaster on a few weeks ago, Colin of McLean. Obviously, Colin and his business partner, Ronald Klein, arguably the world's best rally photographers, and they launched this week their fantastic wider view, the amazing big wide calendar that they do. And they're also doing this year a rally history calendar that has a lot of epic pictures from the past. I saw the cover picture of Tony Pond in a 6R4, which has already sold me on it. And it got me thinking to what is my iconic WRC image. And I think for me, it is of a Toyota Celica, a TTE Celica. It's the 185 Celica jumping on safari with Kilimanjaro in the background and a couple of Maasai warriors stood by the roadside. That's my enduring WRC image.
I know the image now. Jack, I'm expecting an epic response to this, because your encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff is phenomenal as far as I'm concerned. So what's your iconic image?
I can't believe this. You say my any of the business is lady and Ryan asked for a picture.
Well, you know, he thought it through, though. You see the journey he went through to build it, whereas you were just talking about what you did on Saturday.
I'm talking about getting new people into sport who wouldn't necessarily have not done it.
Anyway, it's not about Jack, this isn't about you. Anyway. It's not about Jack Benyon.
This isn't about you, Jack.
Back on to the pictures. I'm sorry, Tony, you're going to be really disappointed with this. Mine's boring. Well, it's not boring, but it's probably quite obvious. I like the picture of Colin McRae and Nicky Grace sticking a finger up at the camera. That's my favourite WRC image. I think that's one that resonates well with you.
Yeah, that's
pretty cool.
Do you know what, mate? I have to say, that was the first one that popped into my head.
Yeah.
I actually felt like, do you know what? I need to do an image. I knew Rye would do an action one, and I thought, I need to think of an action one. What's the action one that kind of springs into my mind?
So not only are you telling me that Ryan's any of his business is lazy, you've had an extra run-up at it. So you knew about it. So you've had plenty of time to think about all your pictures on me, and I've just been on the spot.
I had it 5 minutes in advance of us starting this podcast. So I've been thinking about it throughout the podcast, as well as pressing buttons and trying to make you sound like you're not in the opening sequence of the build.
In fairness, Tony, the only reason you knew what my other business was because you turned up on time for the start of this podcast.
That's a very good point, actually. That's a very, very good point. My iconic image, I suppose, taking inspiration from Jack's inventions last week, is from Swan Lake. And no, do you know what? And I don't know whether this is a McLean picture or not, but it's one that always sticks with me. And everyone talks about the video footage of it, but I can remember seeing it as a picture, probably an MN, and it has been regurgitated probably tens of thousands of times, is Lewis Moyer throwing his helmet, the one off his head, through the back window of the Corolla. I just think that the frustration in the moment and everything else was just caught in that one click. There you go.
I'm just going to finish it off. Let Jack in a minute. I'm just going to come to it with it, because I had a second one as well, and I just want to put the second one out there because there'll be a few people thinking of their own, and that's McRae and the Subaru over Bunnings Jumps. That was my second image.
Australia?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Go on, Jack. Go on, Jack.
I was just going to say, I'd be interested to know what the absolute rally listeners think.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Let's tweet them in
and let's have a look.
You know to find us, folks. Absolute _ rally. Get there on Twitter. If you can find them and tweet them, and that'd be great. That'd be great. I think there's one other image as well, which stays with me. And funny enough, I spoke about it on the GB coverage, was the image of, the Quattro on three wheels. Was it Arnie Hertz?
Yes, Arnie Hertz.
Trying to balance the car.
Yeah.
That is another image, which again is one from probably the very first image I've got in my head is, you know, from when I was a kid going to watch my first rally is from that. So we'll probably go with that one. There you go. Boys, we've done our bit for this week. We spoke about it passionately, but knew a little bit, but not everything. But we're all right with that. Jack, have you got any concerns about suntan for the next 3 or 4 days, or are you just going to wrap up like I am and be very cold?
I've got a very busy week pulling together the British Rally Championship review for next week's paper. So we've got a nice 4-page review of the championship for this year. So that'll be going in the paper next week. So make sure you make sure
you buy the paper. The big question is, are you covering BBC and ITV4 in that particular?
I've chosen a top ten set of drivers from all championships. So if you're lucky, you might feature. If you're not also lucky, you might not feature.
Wow.
Is it the top 10 from the BBC4 class as well?
No.
That's neon impossible. You're joking.
Can I say something right? I don't think there are 10 drivers in RC4 this year, so picking a top 10 would be difficult.
Yeah, that's fair dues. Fair dues. I'll take that.
Tony, you haven't done your any of the business.
I know. I was hoping that you wouldn't notice. My any other business for this week? Okay. Are you ready for this?
We are.
I'm ready.
Okay. My any other business for this week is that I'm slowly but surely converting to the idea of perhaps events such as the Most Important Youth Circuit Racing Championship could be the way forward for a driver of a certain age. Thank you, Jack. For a driver of a certain age with a certain budget and for smiles per mile, with the least amount of headaches of doing some of the bigger rallies that I've done over the last 10 or 15 years. And I think what they're doing with that particular championship, and you know, we've spoke about it really flippantly, but it does tie into what Jack was saying. You know, people like Paul O'Neill coming in and doing, obviously, you know, former front runner in the British Touring Cars and things like that, all adds to it. And I know the turnout at Oulton Park was very, very impressive. I know a lot of people who did the rally, a lot of people that went to watch it, you know, they made a real spectacle of what went on, and the atmosphere and everything was phenomenal. And I just think that perhaps, you know, rallying is changing, and maybe it's the generation thing, and I'm not really sure. I spent the day, I did some commentary and some work for Downforce on BTRDA Rallycross at the weekend, and the weather was torrential rain and it was horrendous, but again it was a very, very packed Croft, and you know, just wondering whether the worm is turning and whether we need to start looking at ways of bringing rallying to the public and not losing what we know is rallying. I know Ryan will probably be scratching his nails down a blackboard now with me saying that, but I just think things might need to change across the board to keep people interested and keep people turning out and watching rallying. That's my only other business.
I don't have a problem with anything that promotes rallying, and if it gets people into rallying, ultimately that's where most people start on single venue type events anyway. You know, I've talked in the past about the Christmas Stages rally that I do at Croft, which gets, I think it's Croft's third biggest crowd of the year, between Christmas and New Year, and if that's a way to get people into the sport, then I'm all for it.
Well, Are you doing it this year?
I have no idea, but I have to decide because the entry opens.
I was just about to say
today, I think.
Yeah. You need to make a decision on that. We might come and lend some support.
What I might go and do is go and order a pina colada, sit by the pool, and ponder on it.
Yeah, Do you want me to tell you, everybody, right? I know for a fact that it's raining in Barbados at the moment, so don't believe a word that he's saying.
It's actually stopped now, so I'm absolutely... that's about what I'm going to do. I'm going to go outside and order a pina colada, and I will tweet a picture for you.
God bless. Right, Jack, at same time, same place next week?
Yep.
Okay, I look forward to speaking to you. Right, are you back from your travels next week?
I will unfortunately be back in the cold and wet and possibly snowy weather by then, yes.
Folks, all three of us will be back next week. I hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. Coming up next, we've got Martin Holmes, who, let's just say, is an encyclopedia extraordinaire of rallying, obviously former co-driver, photographer, writer, just a man has got his finger on the pulse and has done for decades, it feels like. So we've got Martin Holmes coming up next. And, yeah, just sit back, relax, and enjoy. And by all means, tweet us in your pictures. Don't forget, @absolute_rally. And let us know what your thoughts are. The debate still continues on where all these drivers are going to end up.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And it's great to have somebody on that. I've wanted to get on the show for such a long time. And I'll do this as respectfully as I can, but somewhat an elder statesman of coverage as far as I'm concerned when it comes to the World Rally Championship and championships around the world. Martin Holmes, thank you and welcome to Absolute Rally.
Welcome to be here. Tell me what I can do to tell you.
It's just great to have you on. You know, I guess for all of us, you know, my first initial involvement of certainly being aware of yourself was obviously the fantastic World Rally Annuals. You know, obviously, which I've still got some at home. I think we all still refer to them. We'll start there and we'll kind of work backwards, and then I suppose we'll come back to present day to some degree. But the annuals, how did putting together those annuals first come about?
Well, it started really at the end of the 70s, and it became clear that the World Championship, which started in 73, was becoming a permanent part of the sport. And as such, it was obviously necessary to find some way of recording what was happening so that people in the future would know what it had been like. 79, we published the first book, which covered the 78 season. And before then, really, there was only one annual book about rally, dedicated to rallying, and that had been published in France. And so we had quite an open door for development. And after a year or two, Rothmans came on board, and they did a lot to encourage the book. And I think it was 4 years we had working with them. And then, of course, we had other people following on from there.
I was just about to say, I you know, in my time of being involved with certain tyre manufacturers, I remember getting one given to me by a tyre manufacturer that I'd been working with that year. And I felt very lucky to have one of these books. It was my first kind of real introduction. I'd read other people's and I'd seen them in other places, but to have one of my own, which I still have, by the way, which is still in my mum's house, in a bookcase there, I felt very, very lucky to have. And it was so comprehensive as well, because not only did you cover the World Rally Championship, of course, you also covered a lot of the UK championships.
And the European Championship.
Yeah, of course.
And the other regional championships, yeah. Yes.
And how do you go about gathering that level of information, Martin?
Well, I used to go to a lot of rallies in those days, and World Championship rallies, and used to go to regional rallies, European Championship rallies in between. And you met a lot of people, and they met you. and they knew what you were doing, and a lot of people just simply offered and said, is there anything I can do? I said, yes, please. How many starters on that event? Who was your champion? And have you got a photograph of the winner and everything like that? So people were offering, and it's building up from there.
I think it's what's quite funny is one of my co-hosts, Ryan Champion, who of course you're probably familiar with. Ryan and I were certainly talking mm-hmm. about your good self the other week, and he claims that he only knows, he is encyclopedic about car registration numbers, or rally car registration numbers especially, and he believes that that comes from the annual.
Well, we were, I think, the first people really to follow that up. I mean, in those days, a registration didn't necessarily confirm an identity. In some countries, it still doesn't. Nowadays, with Group R cars, they all have passports, and they each have an identity number. So the thing is developing from there. But in the old days, of course, with the Mark 1 Escorts and Mark 2 Escorts, cars were reshelled, and it was very difficult to know what represented a true identity of a car. But having said that, then comes the photographic aspect to it, and having registration numbers available, a registration number on most cars, not so much at the moment, but in those days, was the most visible sticker on the side of the car. And the one which, with people tending to take head-on photographs as much as side photographs, if you had a registration number in your picture and you had a record of who was driving that car, you knew who immediately was driving the car in your picture. So it had more than just simply a record of the history of the cars. I mean, I still get people who come back and say, I've got a Quattro, and I'm told it's an ex-works one, and I'm told it was one that Hannu Mikkola or Walter Hill was driving. Is it true? And even now, to have those records from the 80s, it's very, very important.
Of course, because you were involved with the Audi Sport World Rallying book as well. So, and I guess, you know, David...
Well, World Rallying... Yeah, that was a series which then, of course, morphed into the Pirelli books.
Yeah. David Sutton, who of course, is a legend amongst rally fans, obviously, you know, gave us the Rothmans Escort and then the Quattros as well. What was he like to work with? I've done some work with him many, many years ago. What was he like to work with in his heyday?
Well, I got to know David, obviously, when I was co-driving, and on some occasions I actually co-drive for him, and then, of course, we've been friends for a long, long time, and then different drivers came to his team, and would I co-drive with him, and things like that. He was a person of enormous character. I mean, obviously, his background, he was a Mansfield man. And, you know, there are different sort of people in that part of the world. But he settled down to London, and it wasn't long before he was very, very friendly with people from lots of different parts of the world, of course, particularly in Finland. And, well... I mean, he was the last person to run a private team that won a world championship. So, I mean, if you ask what he was all about, I mean, that is probably the greatest thing you can say about it.
Absolutely. Now, you've just touched upon, obviously, before all these books and everything came about, you were a very, very successful co-driver. In 1971, you were a national champion over here in the UK, and you sat with some stars, really, didn't you?
Well, I've been lucky. I didn't have many regular drivers. I mean, Chris Slater was probably the driver with whom I have had a longest association over the years. But it's like when you're a co-driver, people get to know you, and it's never long before vacancies arise. And, of course, in those days, people didn't tend to settled down for a season with a person. Things were very much from event to event. I mean, going back to the days when I used to do the British rally, the rally, road rallying, night rallying. I mean, people used to phone up all the time, and I could maybe have done rallies with 10 different drivers in the course of a year. I mean, not so many as my friend Denis Girardet has done over the years, but I mean, it was all part of the character of the sport.
Were you keeping records of what you were doing then as well? Was that kind of where the inspiration came from to continue that on? Have you still got records of everybody you sat with and results and things like that?
Not, no. Would have been perhaps a good idea if I did the EWRC results service. Has got quite a lot of my details, but not all of them by any means. And of course, nowadays, this search for statistics and research and facts has developed. In the old days, people never paid any attention to that sort of thing at all.
Now, as I say, obviously you became a co-driver. Then you got into the photography side of rallying as well, and obviously writing articles and things. Did it all kind of morph into one at one point, or was the clear kind of forks in the road? You know, co-driving's done here. I'm now going to move into this. Or did it all kind of was there overlaps throughout your career?
In the old days, like when we used to do the Mercury News Rally Championship events, you used to volunteer to write the report because it was a joyful way to get your name in print. I don't say everybody did that, but I think most of the people, most of the rally reporters did it for that reason. Competing was the first object. Writing was secondary to competing. When we started to do a lot of rallies abroad, it was really good for me to be able to make reports for magazines on those events, not just for yourself, but to spread the word of what other type of rallying was going on in the world.
Publications-wise, I was trying to get a definitive kind of list of publications you've contributed to. Again, is this something that you've kept a record of? Can you roll off the tongue the publications you've contributed to over the years?
Well, no, most of them have gone bankrupt.
It's your high rates, Martin.
You would never have heard of them.
It's your high rates. That's what it is.
Clearly, I mean, Motoring News was, I think, the first people I did any work with, and that was must have been in the early 70s, and before then, early 60s. Sorry, early 60s. Obviously, they used to have good reports of their championship rallies and comparable rallies, and then of course we used to do a lot for Autosport, which used to be very keen on rallying in those days. Unfortunately, that hasn't continued to these days. But I've been rally editor for Autocar. I've been rally editor for Motor in those days. And I think it was on one famous occasion, I think it was a Tour de Course, I reported for all four of the British weekly magazines. But it was heavy going. I mean, often in those days we used to do two rallies a weekend, a rally on a Friday night and then a rally on a Saturday night. And of course, people wanted stories from both. And obviously, they also wanted to have photographs, and I used to be, well, still am, but in those days, very close friends with Hugh Bishop, and we got together and really made sure that people had Bishop's pictures and my stories, and it was teamwork, which I think worked well for a number of years.
Do you feel that the way rallies are now covered and things like that, and now it's almost given that we know what the result is, thus there's almost another story now that needs to be written, as opposed to back then, I suppose, you know, no internet and things like that. People were literally waiting for those stories to come out to find out the results.
They were. One of the interesting people I used to work for was the Daily Express. And they used to have a service of results on the Monday morning. I remember I used to do it for two or three years, I think, and I remember the first time I knew I had won a major rally in this region in the south of England was when I saw the Daily Express had said, here are the results. First was, I think it was a guy called Blunt and myself. I thought, oh, that's interesting to know. I mean, on that occasion, I hadn't been reporting on the event. Somebody else had done. And in those days, of course, you don't always know who won the rally when the rally came to an end. Sometimes it was a few days later before you got to know.
Wow. And that, see that, you know, even for me, that kind of blows my mind when you think about how quickly now we know who's won a rally. You know, there's people literally still competing on the rally when, you know, when rally winners are crowned these days. So to have that concept to be loading the car on the trailer and going home and, you know, getting some sleep and getting up and going to work the following day and still not to know that you've won a rally, I find mind blowing.
No, I mean, it happened that way. I mean, you say it's putting the car in the trailer. It was not necessary. Well, we didn't have trailers in those days. but it wasn't going to work. It was going to the rally the next night.
Yeah, of course, of course.
I mean, it was great days. I mean, I remember one weekend there was I did a long rally in Northern Ireland, and then the Saturday night, straight afterwards, I did another rally in the home counties. And then I remember on one famous occasion, we had a Motoring News Championship rally called the Isle of Wight Rally in the south, and I was leading the rally with, I was the co-driver, with about three stages to go, and we had a huge crash, and I had to go to hospital and everything like that. And then we had a rally that weekend in that following night in Kent, and we won that. So I was so disappointed. I would have really liked to have won two rallies on consecutive days, but then on the other hand, I did have the special factor of having been to hospital in the meantime.
I was just about to say, how did that conversation go with the doctor when you're discharging yourself to go and do another rally, bearing in mind the reason why you were there?
This was in a hospital in Newport in the Isle of Wight, and I don't remember very much about it. I do remember somebody coming bursting into what I suppose could have been called the A&E department of the hospital, saying, "Get rid of that person, the rugby players will be coming in soon."
Oh, there you go.
I thought, oh, that's putting rallying in its place, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, out of all the, you know, I, again, with the little bit of research and a few bits and pieces I've read as well, I was looking at some of the cars you've sat in. Now, obviously, you mentioned David Sutton's cars before, obviously the Mark 1, Mark 2 Escorts and stuff, but Ryan Yongyotti in the Renault 5 Turbo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the last rally I ever did, actually. Yeah.
What a way to go. What a way to go out.
Oh, yes. I mean, we got on very well. I didn't actually speak very much with him because my French was no better than his English. But we had a good time. He did come up with some funny things in the middle of the rally. I remember we spun off in Yorkshire somewhere into a crowd of people who fortunately all sort of dissolved as we approached sideways. And we stalled the engine in front of a large sign which had been obliterated, and it says "Doctor." And he turned around and he said, "Check the regulations. What is penalty for killing a doctor?" I thought, he's got a sense of humour, which I think is rather good. He was great fun.
They were such beasts as well, weren't they? You know, the kind of the mid-engined, you know, rear drive. You know, they were such beasts to get hold of. And you know, the RAC in those days was over so many different services and so many different counties and everything else. How do you go about spending your time in a very hot rally car? Because I always think of mid-engine as being quite hot cars and not having, you know, a common language to speak.
I did a rally with the Hanke rally in Finland once with Kirsti Hämäläinen, and our common languages were down to zero in that case. And, that was quite good fun. We came fourth in the end, but we'd been leading until halfway. You know, it was a rally over two nights, and of course, in the daytime between the first day and the second day, it started to snow, and so we therefore started the second day first car on the road, and of course, the snow meant that we had the worst of the conditions, but. It was interesting. Things happen which you never notice when you spend all the time actually talking to somebody. You're looking around at other things which are going on.
Of course.
I remember once I had what I thought was a heart attack. It was the fact that it was, of course, secret rallying in those days. And I looked up, I opened my eyes, and there was a snowbank right in front of us, and four brilliant lights shining in the snow. Now, when you see lights which are circular on the ground, it means you are in the middle of a huge accident. It means you're airborne, pointing down to the ground. And at that moment, I was just, what a heart attack. It wasn't that at all. It was a car just skidding past the snowbank. But it was a very interesting thing. In those days, that rally used some special stages taken from the Thousand Lakes. And I knew exactly when we came to one of these Thousand Lakes roads, because suddenly his driving styles changed altogether, even though it's a snow rally, and the Thousand Lakes, of course, is a summer rally. You could tell exactly, he knew exactly what that road was, even though it's a completely secret route. Things like that you notice, which, you know, if you're having a normal relationship with a driver, you would probably never have noticed at all.
Absolutely. Now,
really interesting.
Going through... you know, as I say, the list of cars is probably, I got it down to Mark 1, Mark 2 Escorts. I think a Lancia Stratus was in there. Obviously, we've just been talking about the Renault 5 Turbo. Have I missed anything out of any notable interest? Am I doing you justice just naming those cars?
Did a lot of rallies with the Datsun Zeds. Had a lot of accidents in them. I don't know, really. I don't know whether you count a Clan Crusader as an interesting car.
A Clan Crusader?
A different car.
Go on, tell us about that one. Yeah. A Clan Crusader, go on, this is a new one on me.
Well, it was a long time ago now. It was a special-bodied imp made by a company up in Washington and County Durham. And we did... a guy bought his car, and that was the driver, Alan Connolly, who came from Hexham, and he wanted to. He was. I knew him through Motoring News Rallies. He used to have, I think, didn't it, Avengers, I think, in those days. He said, "I've got this Clown. Can we go running together?" And I said, "Yeah, make something different." And it was really good fun in those days with very low on the ground. I mean, I don't know how it would compare with cars now. Darien, I suppose.
Is it Ginetta as well?
Comparison.
I think some of the smaller Ginettas, perhaps. I'll be honest with you, I've just pulled it up as I'm speaking to you now. And I don't know, you know, there's only 315 of those cars actually produced at that point. So I hope you didn't destroy too many of them.
The Clan?
Yeah.
I don't think we had an accident at all. I mean, the thing that I do remember in those days was, especially at the starts of rally, it was very revealing because you were sitting so down, like low down, and you'd line up from the start. You used to have lots of spectators, young people out for the night watching the cars going off the start. And I mean, it was just at the age where the girls were wearing miniskirts. It was wonderful. Wonderful what you could see from a Clan Crusader seat.
Of all the things to remember, Martin, I saw
it. No, I mean, it was interesting with the Clan, because they had high-powered imp engines. And, I mean, if you've been all night at 10,000 revs, it's special. I remember I never had a chance to rally with Colin Malkin, but I did rally with the late Rodney Badham on several rallies. And I remember what fun it was in his car. Just the whole thought of the huge revs. I mean, since we had the kit cars in the, when was it, late 90s in the World Championship, we've never had cars doing 10,000 revs before.
Yeah. Out of the F2 era in the Super 1600s, I have got a massive passion for that reason. Super 2000s nearly did it for me, I must admit. But no, the F2 cars was something special, I must admit. But just coming back full circle, you obviously, you speaking about your co-driving skills and stuff. Now, the co-driving book that you were involved with, I've actually got both versions of it. I got the updated version and I had the original version from when I first started rallying. And it's quite funny because when I got the original copy, is when I was first starting out in rallying. And now there's quite a lot of the people in the book.
I'm showing my age,
but there's quite a few people in there now that I know. It's quite funny, really. Your book did come in very, very handy. I entered my partner into a rally, her very first rally as a co-driver, a little over a month ago now. And we used your book as a point of reference. And somebody bought the newer edition as a gift. It was quite funny. I said, well, it's exactly the same book, but we've got both versions now anyway. How did the inspiration...
But it's interesting how things...
Where did the need, I suppose, well, it was obvious where the need was because people needed to know, you know, how to start because that's what it kind of gave people. But where did the inspiration come from for you? Did somebody come to you and say, we think you need to, you know, you can put it, string a few words together. We think you should possibly give people, you know, a guide to get started, or was it just something you did off your own back?
I did it off my own back and then, started writing the book and what you did in the old days is go to publishers with a synopsis of what you were planning to write, how you were going to write it, what your attitude was, what you were going to do about pictures, what the market was and everything like that. And one of the famous motorsport publishers in those days said, yeah, let's have a go, and we did it, and it gave me income for several months, so that was useful. But it was interesting, of course, how things are absolutely different now. But not everything is different. Attitudes about wanting to win and using ideas, just thinking about how to get the better of your rivals and things like that, that's still there. And it's interesting that there's still some truths in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting you mention that with regards to, I use the term gamesmanship a little bit, I guess, what you've just described there. And one thing that is kind of lost is, perhaps in the older days, gamesmanship wasn't there and it was all high japes and friendly rivalry and stuff like that. But every time I speak to somebody and you know, you speak about the motoring news days, I remember people like Ian Harwood, who was local to us, and speaking to Ian about things that went on back in the day. There was rivalries and there was the level of competition and people wanted to beat one another just as greatly, if not more.
Right, so you know Ian Harwood. I hope you haven't been talking too many stories.
I haven't spoken to Ian for a long time, but he did introduce me to the sport. So.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, that's... He was one of my favourite drivers, yeah. Anyway. The things that were... It wasn't just gamesmanship. It was just thinking about things that you could do to get an advantage. I mean, nowadays, people are good at it. You know, you just look at the drivers. Why does the driver go mad about on that stage compared with other people? And it's because they worked out which was the part of the rally in order to concentrate on to get the best result. Then when it comes to the maps, in the old days when we started road rallying, the maps didn't tell you everything you needed to know. You had to go and look and spend afternoons driving around and around, checking whether you could drive through a particular track and everything like that. And it was working out what it is that would be useful when it came to the rally. That is the type of thing
if I can ask you, there's so many questions I could ask you, but I'm just conscious of time as well. But out of all, before we come to present day, and maybe it may be applied to present day as well, you know, all the events that you've covered and all the things that you've been involved with, what's kind of the strangest story perhaps you've witnessed or heard from the WRC in, you know, over the years, you know, that you've been in it from pretty much, or involved with it from pretty much, you know, year one?
I have to think about that one. I mean, clearly, no, I can't give answer off the cuff about that. If you'd like to phone up this time next week, maybe I come with
some thoughts. I've got a funny feeling, Martin, you will be back on this programme at some point, so perhaps we'll come back to that one. But I suppose if we come up to modern day, and I feel like we're not kind of doing you justice here, which is why I think we will do something again, certainly. You're still involved. You're still writing about rallies. Are you still attending lots of rallies?
Not as many as I'd like. For personal reasons, it's very difficult for me to be away at nights these days. But, I mean, I've attended half of the World Championship rallies this year and followed them closely all the time. I mean, I've got writing outlets in 10 different countries on a regular basis. And obviously, most of those want reports from events, which nowadays you can do an effective extent from home. You've got all the results monitor services available to you. You've got Rally Radio, which is a very, very useful thing. On the radio, you hear each driver 10 times during an event. If you go to an event, you're lucky if you speak to it. The same driver 4 times or something like that. So really it's a different thing. But if you don't go to the rally at some stage, like on the Wednesday beforehand, and meet everybody, they've forgotten you, you've forgotten them, and you've just lost touch in the sport. People, when you walk around the paddock on the surface park on the Wednesday or the Thursday before event, you meet people you didn't expect to meet. And when you meet somebody you didn't expect, you come away with a story and you come away with understanding things you didn't do before. So actually attending events in one way or another is essential, really essential.
The big story that I think is the story of obviously the WRC probably the last 5 years is the fact that we've lost Volkswagen. Was that a story that shocked you when it broke?
I was not surprised they stopped, but I was shocked at the timing of it all.
Was that due to the fact that they've been spending...
I mean, when you consider that they won everything they wanted to, and when you consider how the promotional value of success tails off exponentially the longer you are at it, it didn't make sense to keep at it all the time. No, what I was really disappointed with, I mean, I thought at the beginning of the year, as soon as we heard that Capito was on his way, that he didn't leave for a long time, but when we knew that he was going to go, I thought, he knows something. But whether he knew exactly what were the reasons for moving on, or whether it was just coincidental, I don't know. But I mean, certainly cemented in my mind that the fact that Volkswagen can't keep doing this all the time, it doesn't make sense.
Despite the fact they've been...
The idea of doing it...
Just developing that car, though, for 2 years. You know, they'd still been developing that 2017 car. I was like you. I wasn't surprised because I know what they did in Dakar. And, you know, they went in, they basically annihilated everybody in Dakar and then got out. And I could see it happening in rallying. And we made reference to it in the podcast the other week. But they've had Marcus Grönholm testing this car for 2 years.
No, I realise that. But, I mean, that's the German system, isn't it? I mean, it's happened with Audi, suddenly stopped. It's happened that wonderful year, what was it, 1981, where Mercedes were building their wonderful car and they got Walter Roll to drive it, and Walter said, well, it's a bit old-fashioned design. You won't win it, and they immediately canned the program and hadn't been back to rallying since then. So, I mean, this is German stuff, really. So that aspect of it didn't surprise me. I mean, when you're a company the size of Volkswagen, the few millions that you spend doing that, really.
Absolutely. Now, have you been playing, as we all have, and I think every rally fan has across the world, kind of fantasy WRC manager? Have you found homes for the waifs and strays that have been left by Volkswagen now to ply their trade elsewhere?
Well, no, I haven't really. I mean, I can envisage Ogier, etc., if they'll have him back. I mean, after all the stress that there were with him when he was working with them and alongside Loeb, if they didn't want him, I could understand that. Latvala, I think, is a little bit more. I think there's a lot more sympathy hoping that Latvala can get himself sorted out. Mikkelsen, I really don't know. But what is interesting with Mikkelsen, of course, this is not his first major rebuff in the sport. Remember when his father went bankrupt and all of a sudden the person who had bankrolled all this original rallying for Mikkelsen suddenly wasn't behind him at all and he was on his own. But, you know, people in Norway knew what he was all about and buckled together and found him drives with the Subaru Cup cars and everything like that. He came back again. And, of course, bouncing back again is one of the necessary attributes of a successful rally driver. Some have to go through it in full measure and some manage to escape the heartaches, but certainly it's heartache time for everybody at the moment.
I think we've all kind of we've discussed this kind of, you know, pretty much for the last two episodes, but I think we'd all like to see Ogier at M Sport. I think we all like to see, because we all recognise that M Sport have, you know, obviously are not a manufacturer. They have to wheel and deal and get drivers in and do this and do that. And they haven't been perhaps at the forefront probably since maybe even, you know, Marcus was there, you know, to be in a real, real chance of perhaps securing a title.
I don't think that Ogier would suddenly bring success for M Sport. I don't think so. M Sport have been developing the idea with Camilli as a back burner driver, with Tanak waiting, who has undoubted opportunities, waiting to calm down and not make mistakes. And then the one person that people never talk about these days, for reasons I can't understand, is Østberg. When you consider everything that Østberg has achieved with M Sport over the years, and when he was what he achieved with Citroën only 2 years ago, I mean, it was Østberg who beat Meek in the World Championship. It's Østberg who has been, until Rally GB, had more World Championship points this year than Camilli and Tanak put together. That means a lot. And a lot of people, particularly the fans, tend to forget what things really do mean. So it will be really interesting to see what happens. I'm interested that Østberg is now driving the 2017 Ford, and we'll see where that leads.
Well, yeah, and earlier in that test as well, which we made reference to earlier in the podcast, obviously Elvin's been driving that car as well.
Good. I do feel a little bit sad for Elvin, but, very sad for him, actually, to be fair. To be honest, as he would say. why I keep saying that, I don't know. certainly Elvin still has the aspects that he's got to conquer. I mean, like, Meek has got aspects he's got to conquer. I mean, why was Meek such a miserable devil in Rally GB? Why? That's not a champion's driving style. I don't know. Perhaps you know more about it than I do.
No, I think there was a level of frustration. Perhaps the DS3 had come to the point where, you know, there's been no development on it for the last year. I think there was issues with tyres. And he felt he drove as hard as what he could go. And I think, you know, probably in his mind, he was already in the 2017 car, ready to go and ready to go and have that fight. I think he was perhaps maybe box ticking and doing what was asked of him to do. I don't know. I'm equally a guessing the way you are, to be honest with you on that one.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I was disappointed listening to what Mick was saying during Rally GB. You know, I really wanted to be to attack, you know, but no, didn't happen.
Absolutely. Martin, believe it or not, we've took up a hell of a lot of your time. We're kind of 39 minutes into this, and I said I was only going to grab you for 5 minutes. So can we do something again soon in a not too distant future? Would that be okay?
With pleasure. Phone me or phone Chav. I mean, there's plenty of ways we can talk.
Happy days. Listen, it's been a pleasure to have Martin Holmes on, a little bit of a legend, to say the least, on Absolute Rally. And yeah, I hope you've enjoyed that, folks. And sit back, relax. We've got one more break, and I'm going to come back with Jamie Edwards.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. Welcome back to a former guest and a man, to be fair, along with one or two others who've been the saviour of rallying, as far as I'm concerned, in our Welsh Forest. Jamie Edwards, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
We're really good. Now, last time we had you on, everything was still up in the air. You know, obviously, GB was safe. Of course, that's been and gone now. But, you know, certainly thereafter, there were really, real concerns about what was going to happen and how people were going to be able to go rallying in Wales. We've now got somewhere with that story. And obviously, the story's kind of come out now that everything's going to be okay. But we thought it'd be good to get you back on just to kind of take us through what happened, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you probably know, you know, we were in a sticky situation. There was a disagreement between the Motorsports Association and Natural Resources Wales, who look after the forests that we use for rallying in Wales. And they couldn't come to an agreement on price for sort of the later part of 2016 onwards. And obviously, Rally for Wales came along. We set it up and you know, without cutting a story too long, you know, we were able to come to a successful conclusion with it. And from January onwards, a new company, Rally for Wales Limited, will be tasked with basically maintaining and repairing the forest roads after rallying use for national and international rallying in Wales from January onwards.
So just, I suppose, for the layperson and perhaps people who are not familiar with how this kind of works, is that obviously we all go to a rally, whether we go to watch, whether we go to compete or whatever. But as you say, there's always going to be some repairs to be done after a rally. What's gone before and what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, so previously, prior to this coming into force, Natural Resources Wales, and previously to that, the Forestry Commission, obviously managed their own estates, and therefore when a rally came along, they would prepare the roads for the rally, make sure that they were in good condition and would do the best as possible to bring a halt to any logging operations to ensure, you know, a safe passage for the rally. And then subsequently, they would have the duty to repair the roads back to a good condition, because obviously forestry operations continue. And also there are people that live in remote areas as well that use forestry linked roads on a daily basis. So obviously there is an incentive to fix that. Obviously, we came to a situation where there was a disagreement between both sides, because NRW were seeking to have a very, very high cost increase for the continued provision of repair in the roads. And that wasn't going to be acceptable for the sport. It would have basically blown the sport out of the water in Wales in terms of costs. So the situation now is that we've set up a company called Rally for Wales Limited, which is basically going to be a repairs specialist civil engineering company, complete with a grader, plant equipment, vibrating rollers, crushing equipment for stone, etc., etc. And that whole process then is that we come in and we'll work directly with the motor clubs after each rally to actually repair the forest roads back to the condition that they need to be in for normal forestry operations to continue.
Wow. And you've done all that in, I'm just trying to think now, this kicked off, didn't it? It's probably, what, 4 months ago, 5 months ago this really kicked off?
Yeah, I think it was actually the very end of April, beginning of May, that the initial announcement came out that the two parties were at loggerheads, really. So, you know, where it all started was I wrote a blog, rather foolishly, saying how desperately sad it would be if rallying in Wales, you know, couldn't continue. And a lot of people read it, and a lot of people said, you know, we need to do something. And from there, I set up Rally for Wales as a campaign group, along with Dave Everson and Gwyn Reynolds-Jones from the Welsh Association of Motor Clubs. And we started to lobby people, lobby the MSA, lobby NRW, and also political figures in Wales as well, to basically say, you know, rallying in Wales is big business. It's a £15 million industry. And where it was heading at that time was that, you know, there wasn't really going to be a very sensible resolution to it, unfortunately. It was all heading towards extremely high costs. I mean, anything up to 100% increase on what was paid before. So, the campaign group initially started, obviously, to raise awareness and to let people know that we need to do something. And eventually it morphed into us working with a guy called Richard Keane, who owns his own forestry and forestry operations business in North Wales. And Richard came on board with us and basically partnered with us to come up to the table with a solution of actually what we call a self-repair system. And it basically gained momentum from that day onwards. And we were able to work with the MSA and NRW to reach a positive solution.
I guess the beauty of this as well is that we are kind of, to some degree, in control of our destiny, and you know, everybody kind of comes out of it in a good place. NRW have kind of got what they wanted, and MSA probably got what they wanted, and of course we got what we wanted, being really, really selfish, I guess, that we got to go rallying still in Wales.
Yeah, and that was always that's always been the goal, was to safeguard what we have. But you know, I look at it as well as an opportunity for the future, and that's one of the things that we're actually working on right now is you know, working with the clubs themselves and starting to work with the organisers to actually look at how we're going to deal with the future of rallying, not just 2017, but 2018 onwards. This new deal that we've put in place, it will give a degree of flexibility in terms of enabling clubs to look at potentially different forests, different routes that they may have felt were off limits. Who knows? You know, but that's something that we're very keen to develop now, and develop relationships to. We have now a little bit more control over how we're going to look after the path that rallying follows in Wales, because we have this self-repair function, which means that we can have discussions with organisers and say, look, you know, if they come to the table and say, we want to try and run a rally to do X, Y, Z, we can have a discussion about that and say, okay, well, yeah, let's have a look at what we can do. And, you know, working in partnership with the MSA and NRW, there's a real potential for us to have a long-term future for the sport, rather than a very short-term future, which was looking likely about 6 months ago.
Do you think this model will be rolled out elsewhere? Because it seems to be a sustainable model, and it seems to keep, as I just alluded to there, everybody kind of comes out as a winner in this. Do you think it could be rolled out in other parts of the UK, maybe in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly from a UK perspective, Northern Ireland actually, Northern Ireland have been doing this for their forestry rallies for many years. So it's actually a system that has already been working well for them over there. From our perspective, obviously, in mainland UK, Historically, in Wales, England, and Scotland, the Forestry Commission themselves have always taken that responsibility to maintain their own roads, etc. But world's changed, particularly in Wales with Natural Resources Wales. They're facing enormous budget cuts, which is partly how this situation came out in the first place. So from a sustainability point of view, yeah, I think there's real potential for, Rally for Wales to become a Rally for England or Rally for Scotland, and we can look after our own future of the sport. And I think it's more to the point, I think it's really important that other areas of the UK do start looking at these options for the future, because, there's going to be increasing focus on rallying activities in forestry for things like environmental reasons, what benefits it actually brings to the table commercially, etc., etc. So, yeah, there's a real opportunity, I think, for us to sort of shake the tree, if you'll excuse the pun, and see what comes out.
I know how much work you've put into this. Just don't write another blog about what you've just been saying. You'll be safe.
Yeah, I think you'll be safe. Probably not a bad idea. Yeah, I wouldn't like to actually hazard a guess at how many hours it was, but there was a lot of hours, a lot of driving up and down the country, a lot of meetings, a lot of handshakes, a lot of, can I buy you a coffee? Can we have a chat about this? But, it was a big task. I mean, I'll be honest with you, as somebody, who spends most of his time co-driving in rally cars, 12 months ago, I never thought for one minute that I'd be sitting here now formulating a new company to take the sport in Wales into a bit of a different direction. And but it had to be done. Somebody had to do it. And unfortunately, I somehow managed to volunteer myself to do that. So not quite sure how that happened, but there we are.
As biased as I am, I couldn't think of a better person to do it, to be perfectly honest with you. I think you see it from both sides, and I think you've got the ability almost to see it from the commercial side, and obviously from the point of view of being a competitor. And I think that's what has probably brought this agreement about. I think if somebody didn't have that balanced view, I'd still have fears for what was going to happen in Wales. So good on you and Richard and everybody else who's behind it.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. I mean, it's a fair comment, Tony, at the end of the day. I mean, we've had to, it's a business. What we've set up is a business. It's going to be a not-for-profit enterprise, admittedly, but it's still a business. It still has risks. It still has insurances, health and safety issues. It still has all types of things. So, yeah, it's been a voyage of discovery. It's been useful having, that business experience to apply to the situation in terms of, procurement issues, legislation that we needed to consider. So, yeah, it's been a big task, but, there's a lot of hard work ahead of us in 2017, but at least the foundations are there for a longer-term future, and that's the most important thing.
Fantastic. Now, I can't let you go without asking you the question that's on everybody's lips at the moment.
Go on, then.
Should I have tea or coffee when I finish this interview?
I would personally, I would favour a tea.
Okay, all right, I'll go with a tea. Now, the other big question that everybody's asking, of course, is where's he going to end up, Jay?
Where's who going to end up?
Mr. Ogier.
Where's he going to end up? I would be very surprised if he didn't end up driving for a French manufacturer next year.
Okay. You heard it here first, folks. Everyone's got an opinion on that. And this is what is brilliant about our sport at times like this. And everybody's got an opinion. And I genuinely still don't have any idea. I can understand why JB's saying that. But equally, I can almost see possibly the Blue Oval, maybe even coming back, and that may be enough to get Seb back. But hey, who knows? Now, there was a couple of pictures of your good self on Twitter and various other platforms hugging a certain blue-eyed superstar in Rithin on Wales Rally GB. Andreas Mikkelsen, somebody you've known probably a lot longer than most people in the sport of rallying. You were involved with him very, very early on when he first came over to the UK. Andreas, we've got concerns for. Obviously, he didn't even know at that point. I'm not asking you from an insider's point of view, but where do you see someone like Andreas ending up?
Yeah, I mean, Andreas is obviously, my first involvement with him was basically when he came over to be run by Ramsport in Rithin in North Wales, and when he first appeared on the scene. Obviously, a lot of people know that Andreas did a lot of testing in private when he was a 16-year-old in a 2002 Spec Ford Focus World Rally car. And he spent a lot of time in Rhythm, and we used to do a lot with him at Ramsport and give him lots of advice on how rallying in the UK worked and what he could expect when he started his rallying career. And obviously, you know, he's blossomed and you know, he's become he was a fantastic talent then, and he's always been an extremely nice and grounded young man as well. So it's fantastic to see that nothing's changed in that sense. He's still a great guy, and, you know, I'm very, very pleased to see what he's done. Yeah, where do I see him? That's a difficult situation. I mean, he probably, you know, it's one for his management company to sort of come to the table with, but... I think he's a driver that should be in demand. I think he's shown some consistency. He's got pace. You know, he's got a very level head on him. He's a very calculating driver. He's an intelligent guy. And I think, obviously, from a marketing perspective as well, you know, it'd be very difficult to find anybody better than him for obvious reasons. I'm sure that from a commercial perspective that, you know, in a difficult environment in the world at the moment, that if you were to look at somebody that would be able to come up with some sponsorship or some backing on a big scale, you'd think he would be that type of character that could try and do that. So I personally think, you know, I wonder if he'll end up at somewhere like M Sport, driving in some capacity there. I'm not sure, quite sure where he'd slot in, but yeah, I can understand why you have concerns, but I'm sure he'll be all right. I'm sure something will come to the table for him.
And the last one that brings us to, I've got to ask you about Yari Matti as well.
Yeah, Yari Matti, I mean, you know, from an outsider looking in, he's a difficult character to kind of understand, really. Phenomenal pace, but inconsistent. And I think there's been quite long-standing concerns in the sense of sometimes his mental toughness, his ability to bounce back. But I think the thing with Yari Matti is you just never know what he's going to do. He's the type of guy that has the ability to just blow you away with a stage time that you just think, wow, where's that come from? But at the same time, he can make small mistakes. He just doesn't always seem to have the right run of luck. Difficult one to judge. Personally, I think surely it would make sense, given that there's now very much a Finnish presence coming into the sport through Toyota and Tommi Mäkinen. I think he's a natural fit for that team. I'm sure, given that there's a pretty strong Finnish contingent, obviously, in and around that camp, he would make sense in terms of being a bit of a focal point and a leader for that team. It might be the making of him, who knows, because obviously having to deal with a very tough character in Ogier as team leader at VW probably hasn't been an easy ride for him. So it could be the making of him. It could be the sort of the freedom that he gets to actually, you know, really stand up and say, you know, I'm ready for this. And, you know, good luck to him. He's a fabulous talent, but perhaps a frustrating one.
And on that bombshell, and on that note, I don't think anybody else could have put it any more succinctly. But folks, you do know how to get in contact with us. These are our opinions. We are all still speculating, and everybody who's been on the show this week has had their opinions as well. But they're not too dissimilar to what Jay's just been saying. It has to be said. But send us yours, @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, and you know how to find us now on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Jay, you are our final guest for this podcast. I'm going to give you the opportunity, which I always give to all our guests. Do you have any other business? Is there anything else in the world of rallying at the moment you would like to get off your chest?
No.
No, that's all right then. On that, folks, thanks for the download. See you next week.